Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, across the globe, hunger is a daily reality for far too many people. Around 2.4 billion people lack access to sufficient nutrition, which is almost a third of the global population. It's often passed through generations, making the vicious cycle of hunger hard to tackle, and factors like poverty, conflict, and climate change only exacerbate the problem. Each year, World Hunger Day takes place to call attention to these issues. Founded by the Hunger Project, the day not only highlights the realities of hunger, but encourages us to participate in finding solutions. And it's in long-term sustainable solutions that the organisation has its focus, favouring bottom-up strategies that work to help those most impacted. So, to mark World Hunger Day, we want to explore these strategies, look at the work being done, and understand how a difference can be made. And I'm delighted to welcome to the podcast Rebecca Burgess, who is Country Director at the Hunger Project UK. Hello, Rebecca. How are you doing?
Hi there. Yeah, really good. And such a wonderful introduction. I don't feel like I need to be here. You've got such a handle of the situation. So thank you so much.
You've been listening to Stefan Gates and Rebecca Burgess. See you again sometime. There we go. All done. No, let's start with the basic question. These are crucial issues, but I want to talk about lots of different things along this, the concept of charitable fatigue and the importance of being able to highlight something that we're trying to highlight so often. But let's start with a basic question. How do you define hunger, and is it different from one country to another?
Yeah, there is different definitions. We in particular focus on chronic hunger, and that is very much around sort of the long-term systemic hunger that people face day in, day out. So rather than famine, for example, this is sort of a condition that affects generations, from not having enough food to eat, to not having enough good quality food to eat, to not having the resources to put your children through education rather than getting them to work the land so that you can afford food to eat. And so that is sort of the chronic persistent hunger that we deal with here at the Hunger Project. And over 800 million people globally are going hungry each day.
And for me, trying to inspire people as to the importance of this is can be quite tricky, because sometimes hunger, and certainly chronic hunger, is invisible. You know, people can be overweight but malnourished, and it's quite hard to get this through to people. So we were filming in the West Bank, and there were lots of women who had lots of calories, but it was mainly bread-based, and they had very little access to fresh fruit and vegetables, and which meant that they had lots of problems, such as not getting enough vitamin C causes problems with connective tissues and teeth and things like that. And it was really strange. So is that something that needs to be tackled, this sense of actually showing people how hunger works?
Absolutely. And interesting that you reference women, because two-thirds of people affected by hunger are women, and that's often because they lack the resources, the knowledge about nutrition, and are subjected to traditional cultural practices where women eat last and least. And with women playing such a critical role in the world as mothers, and the nourishment also passes from generation to generation. So if mothers-to-be are already undernourished, their children are born underweight, reducing their physical and mental capacities well into adulthood, which, as you can understand, not only what we see is hunger can kill in those famine situations, but it also lowers IQs, decreases wages, reduces school attendance, and undermines economic growth. So hunger in that sort of silent, invisible, relentless condition is really critical to get people's awareness and education on, but also financial support, because without it, we're not ever going to get to the sustainable development goal of zero hunger.
And how pervasive is hunger? Which parts of the world are most affected, would you say?
So 98% of that 800 million that I referenced earlier are from the developing countries. So that is Africa, Asia, the places where the Hunger Project works. But actually more critical is the long-term landscape for where hunger might be going forward. And approximately 80% of the global population most at risk from crop failure and hunger from climate change are in sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and Southeast Asia, where farming families are disproportionately poor and vulnerable to this. So it's not just about what is happening here today. It is also what the climate emergency will make a reality for billions of people in the future.
So there are lots of tendrils of this problem that spread out to join up lots of different things, such as sustainability as well.
Absolutely. The problem with hunger is because it's so multifaceted. People often just imagine the work that the Hunger Project does must just be putting food on the table. And actually, that's exactly the opposite of what we do as a charity. We very much believe in the sustainable end of hunger. So instead of providing that food, we look at the systemic issues that keep that hunger and poverty in place. So a lot of the work that we do is women focused, because the research says if you help women first, the whole of society benefits. So that's looking at leadership, getting more women into leadership positions, to training and education, getting more girls into school, ending child marriage, but also profiling the amazing women entrepreneurs and businesswomen that have the opportunities to change their communities and society more broadly if they're given that opportunity. So gender and women are just one of the examples of the work that the Hunger Project looks into.
And can you explain a little bit about the practical approach that you have? So what do you actually do? As you say, delivering food solves a problem in the short term, but it's not sustainable, and it causes imbalances in the local community. So what exactly do you do? Especially with women, how do you help them?
Yeah, so a bit of a broader sort of overview of the Hunger Project is that we're a global charity. We were founded in the 70s, so we've had over 40 years of research and impact monitoring to really understand the difference that we're making and making sure that it is providing that sustainable end to world hunger. We operate in 12 countries across Africa, India, Bangladesh, Mexico, and Peru. And our programs all have clear, tangible goals, such as empowering women, improving maternal health, engaging local governments, supporting smallholder farmers on climate resilience, educating girls, ending child marriage, and a whole host in between. And what's critical to our work is that it is community-led. So it might sound like we do a broad range of things, unlike other charities, but that is actually what makes the charity so beautiful, is that every community has their individual needs, and we work with those communities to outline what is the need that they have that's specific to them that is keeping hunger in place. And so, yeah, it's a complicated charity, but one that we know that the model works and that it is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to solve hunger?
Absolutely. We believe wholeheartedly that it is possible to solve hunger. We have the solutions. We know that community-led development actually can end hunger. Those traditional aid models have proven not to work when you're sort of flying in cash without direction, without community engagement. That will help in that immediate situation. And that's why it's so great when it comes to emergencies. But for that long-term, persistent, chronic hunger, we need to ensure that community-led development is at its heart. And if we do that, we're not just looking at people that are hungry as in need of support. They are also the aspiring change makers and entrepreneurs, innovators that we can all learn from. And then the world will be a lot more inclusive, but also knowledgeable about what is working, not just in Africa or India, but how we can learn from them to help our own food supply systems in the West.
Mm. Now, I mean, working with other countries means working with local governments and local councils and well, national governments as well. This is sometimes problematic, isn't it? Do sometimes the local agencies, as in local governments and structures, get in the way of your work?
I think what's critical is knowing that without that engagement, the work that we would do would not be embedded within those communities. So with any collaboration or partnership, you have to find that point where you both are happy with the outcomes that you're hoping to achieve. And so there will always be sort of those conversations that need compromise. But the important thing is that partnership working is one of the solutions to end hunger. And specifically, engaging local governments is absolutely critical to achieving that vision.
Okay. Now, the Hunger Project runs workshops to help people develop the tools that needed to take action and make their voices heard. And I believe the Vision, Commitment and Action workshop is one of these. So I wonder if we could zoom into this particular part of your work and find out what happens, what unfolds, and how does it help to solve nutrition?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've realised over the last 40 years is a big fundamental blocker to ending hunger is people's mindsets. If you can imagine generation after generation witnessing the same outcomes, the same hunger and poverty, and therefore not feeling that sense of hope and vision for a future that is better than one that you've witnessed for the last few decades, then there's that mindset of dependency, there's that mindset of inevitability. And what the Vision Commitment Action Workshop does is give those people the opportunity to actually envision the future that they have the control over and that they can have a better life for not just themselves, but generations to come. And so it's a way of bringing the community together and really sort of understanding not only their individual visions, but then as a community, what vision do they have and what are the sort of actions and next steps in order to start that journey to a self-reliant future. And that's one of the key principles of the work that the Hunger Project does, is that it needs to build self-reliance. So we don't enter any new program or project without having an exit strategy in place, because we don't believe in continuing to fund a project and not embedding it within the community and making it profitable in its own right and getting those local governments and local businesses to take responsibility and fund it also. So self-reliance is such a key element, and it all starts with that Vision, Commitment and Action workshop.
Yeah. So let's look at some of the work that the Hunger Project has undertaken in specific regions. And I know there are many different program countries that you operate in, as you mentioned. But could you give us some of the examples that best highlight how you operate and some of the outcomes that you can pinpoint?
Yeah, well, specifically, actually, with World Hunger Day in mind, it might be good to focus on more of our food and farming and climate change strategies. So just as a broad overview of the projects that we have, we work in what we call imperatives, and they cover things from gender to climate emergency to conflict that you mentioned, technology being really key as well, and obviously food and nutrition. So that's the broad spectrum of the work that we do. In Uganda, for example, we promote sustainable farming practices. So we train farmers to adopt eco-friendly farming methods to enhance agricultural productivity and lead sustainable livelihoods. So we do that across the 9 districts in the country. And what we run is an epicenter strategy. So that is a physical building that houses a multitude of different projects, from microfinance to schooling to nursing quarters to a place where people can use their tools and products to ground down their produce before taking it to market, for example. Across our epicentres in Africa, we help our village partners learn regenerative agricultural practices such as composting and intercropping So that's just one example specifically on how we are helping sustainable farming practices. But then we've got things like in India, we hold workshops that build capacities for individuals to exercise their own leadership and take steps to reduce their vulnerability and formulate strategies to mitigate climate change risks. So this is more about education and planning and strategizing how to mitigate the climate emergency risks that they're facing in particular within those communities. And a whole host of everything in between, from facilitating reforestation and tree planting campaigns. We do this a lot in Ethiopia, but also in Mexico, Indigenous women leaders are confronting climate change head on by installing eco stoves to reduce deforestation. In Ethiopia, as I mentioned, we are addressing environmental degradation through a community-led forest reforestation and land rehabilitation programme to improve the livelihoods of local communities. So, yeah, we really do sort of go into the nitty-gritty of an issue and help those communities go through that journey.
And, I mean, there are so many facets of the issues that are facing people here. I wonder, have you seen any changes in the rates of malnutrition as a result of these efforts? And if so, what are your metrics of success?
Yeah, so unfortunately, due to COVID largely and the climate emergency, the progress that we were making in, say, the 90s has largely been undone. And that is why we're still at sort of the figures that were mentioned at the beginning. And that's the danger that we run, that is, without having sort of this systemic lens on hunger, we won't make the change needed to get to zero hunger by 2030 as the target that the UN set, but also a lot of global institutions have sort of put their mind to too. The Hunger Project in particular really closely tracks our impact to make sure that the communities in which we operate, they are seeing a decrease in hunger. And some stats that we've got is 31% reduction in severe hunger in the communities in which we've operated since we've started, which also includes a 27% decrease in household poverty in those communities.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, really, really tangible results from having this systemic lens, community-led development, female-focused lens on reducing hunger. But also looking at an increase of 25% of female business ownership in the communities in which we operate, and a decrease of 26% in prevalence of child marriage, which you can only imagine the difference that that's making, not only on those children, but the family and the future generations to come. Last year in 2022, we impacted 12 million people with our work. So our global reach is really, really significant. And we're really proud of what we're able to achieve.
Now, tell me a little bit about partnerships. How do partnerships help enable projects in these countries? I know for Mexico, for instance, you've got partners including Microsoft and Starbucks. What's their role and how does it work?
Yeah, partnerships are absolutely integral to the success of the Hunger Project. And you referenced some really great ones, especially our work with Microsoft, which is bridging the divide of connectivity in some of the communities in which we operate. Because as you can imagine, if you're trying to get your business off the ground, but you don't have electricity within your village or even access to a computer, then that's already going to put you at a significant obstacle for scale up and growth. So the work that they do in particular is really great. Partnerships can be multifaceted. They can be more strategic, like the Microsoft one, where we really do work hand in hand with them to develop those programs on the ground, led by those community telling us what the issues are and finding a partner to really help amplify that. But also we have a whole range of partnerships, from cause-related marketing partnerships where they give a percentage of profits from the sale of a T-shirt or a towel, like we've got in the UK with Dock and Bay, that is really integral to providing that core funding that we need to cover those expenses that are felt globally around electricity and overheads of those countries. So not specifically to a project, but really integral to the successful running of the charity globally. We've also got partnerships with trusts and foundations that have given to us year after year because they've seen the impact that we have. So a huge array of partnerships, and they are really important to us here at the Hunger Project and can vary in different sizes and beauty.
Now, partnerships are one side of it, but what about keeping these issues alive amongst the public? You know, I'm wondering about charitable fatigue. You know, I've been hearing about hunger literally ever since I could speak or certainly understand words. And that's many, many years ago. And I wonder, how do you keep these issues vital and just stop people from letting it wash over them?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that there is fatigue, especially around the issue of hunger globally, because it has been talked about for so many decades now and continues to be a huge challenge for us as global citizens. I think what we're finding, especially during the cost of living crisis, that hunger has become a reality just as much for sort of a UK citizen as it is now in a village in Malawi, for example. Like, it's a different type of hunger, but the connection to hunger is much alive and kicking, I would say, to the UK audience. And I think that is a great opportunity to all come together globally on like a campaign like World Hunger Day, to really unite as global citizens on calling for a sustainable food system. Because if we don't start investing in sustainable farming practices and more broader system overhaul, we're all going to face hunger challenges. And that could be the price of a loaf of bread, but that can also be low income and therefore unable to afford it, and more dependence on food banks, to really looking at the resources that we're using and taking from the planet, and the resources that are limited. The water scarcity that we are facing around the world is real, and I think the UK public is becoming more and more aware of that, and this is a great chance to use a campaign like World Hunger Day to really land some of those messages.
So let's hear all about World Hunger Day. When is it? What is it? What's the focus for this year? And what can we do?
Yeah, so World Hunger Day, like you mentioned at the beginning, is on Sunday, the 28th of May, first and foremost. And it's a global campaign that really unites people around the issue of hunger and hopefully inspires people to come together as a collective community to talk about the issues of hunger, and specifically this year, sustainability and food. So what we're looking at is very much championing sustainability in food systems. And this is something specifically that the Hunger Project is passionate about, because our programs focus much more on sustainability to end hunger. This could mean everything from, like I said, the sustainable food systems and overhauling that, to buying and growing locally, to eliminating food waste, and a whole host of in between. And the beauty of World Hunger Day is it's supposed to be an inclusive, collaborative campaign. So anyone that has a vested interest in food can take part in the campaign and use our assets and beautiful imagery and logos and things like that, and really champion what they're doing in this space. Because what we want is it to combat that fatigue that you mentioned earlier, to have this moment in time where we are talking in a united voice about food and sustainability, and making sure that we're all looking towards a future that no one goes hungry.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the Host Sustainable Supper Initiative. That sounds really interesting. How can people get involved?
Yeah, so our call to action for individuals is to host a sustainable supper. This could involve getting your friends and family around for tea. It could also involve hosting something within your employee workspace. It's really open to whatever you feel is possible, but importantly, it needs to be sustainable. So read up more about how to buy your products from locally sourced initiatives. Obviously, try and make it plant-based and meat-free. We'll have menus on our website, worldhungerday.org, for you to download from the 1st of May. And yeah, just really have fun with it and hopefully fundraise for the Hunger Project. But more importantly, have that conversation about sustainability and food and really amplify our voices. We're only a small charity here in the UK. And so people's involvement and engagement on social media is as critical as the funds coming in right now, because without it, no one will see what a need there is globally for us to tackle this issue.
Yeah, well, I'll be getting involved, so I'll be looking at the website on the 1st of May, see what you've got. And looking to the future, what other projects and events do you have coming up?
Yeah, we're always busy. So in the fall, we have in the US our global fall event, which is a chance to all get together and celebrate the year that we've had as a sort of global organisation. And it hosts various different investors from around the world and hear story directly from those that have been helped, including more information from our country partners in places like Mexico and Ghana and India. In the UK, we're launching a t-shirt range with screen print artist Anthony Burrell for World Hunger Day. So hopefully you can visit our shop and get involved, and that can be part of the activity for the day as well. And we're also working a lot with restaurants on implementing that sort of pound at checkout initiative and hoping that to run throughout the year. So if you're a restaurant or you know a great restaurant, definitely go onto the World Hunger Day website to find out more. Other than that, we run an Unleashed Women initiative that is for UK-based women who are looking to make a positive change in this world and join a community that is super passionate about the work that we do here at the Hunger Project. And we come together at forums and events throughout the year to really sort of plan out amazing activity to help fundraise for the charity and raise awareness. So if you're interested in our Unleashed Women community, please do reach out via our website.
Fantastic. And just lastly, you said that we're not going to hit the target of eradicating hunger by 2030. What stands in the way?
Nothing. It would be the quick answer. Nothing is so significant that it should stop us from reaching that if everyone rallies together and addresses this issue immediately. And the issue can be combated by working directly with those countries that are facing hunger at those significant levels. So instead of us looking independently at the issue and thinking aid is the answer, it's actually looking at those organisations and those strategic charities that are operating in this space already and making sure that the money is going to where it needs to be going. And that is going to make sure that we stay on track to ending hunger by 2030. So there's no reason why we can't make it. It's more a matter of principles and directing the flow of income to the right places.
Okay, that's a very positive way to end it. So Rebecca Burgess, thank you so much. Just give us a reminder of where we go to find out more.
Yeah, so either go to worldhungerday.org to find out everything that you need to know about World Hunger Day, from the sustainable suppers to restaurant packs to influencers and chefs. There's a whole host of different assets there for you. And if you want to know more about the Hunger Project's insight, go to thp.org.
Fantastic. Well, it's been brilliant talking to you, and I look forward to getting involved.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Life podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.